Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and I'm at the North American Street Newspaper Association conference here in San Francisco, and I am with Donald Whitehead, who is about to be the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless, which is based in Washington, D.C. He has come from Cincinnati, where he was a former director of the Greater Cincinnati Coalition for the Homeless. He himself was formerly homeless. And I'm also here with Brian Davis, who is the executive director of the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, the editor of the Homeless Grapevine in Cleveland, Ohio, and chairperson of the North American Street Newspaper Association. So we're going to be talking about all these subjects. And I think we'll just start with Brian Davis, since we are in the context of this conference of the North American Street Newspaper Association. And, the usual questions, when was this Street Newspaper Association formed? How long has it been going on? How long has this conference been going on? And what's happening?
This is the sixth year for the Street Newspaper Association. We first met in Chicago 6 years ago. It took us about a year to actually organize into an official group, but we've been going strong since then and adding papers every year to the association. So we have nearly 35 papers throughout Canada and the United States who are represented here. Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, we didn't always have so many homeless people, so we didn't have such a need. But it seems like the homeless newspapers are really, at least in the Bay Area here, we have a different one in the East Bay and in San Francisco, and they're really becoming part of the landscape and a real way for people to express themselves about themselves, which must be a positive in a life that's otherwise just really full of hardships.
Right. Most of the papers are an outlet for homeless people to express themselves. With the spread of the street newspaper movement, we've also seen attacks on that movement from municipalities who try to outlaw the existence of street newspapers. That happened in Cleveland. It's happened in Florida and in Arizona as well. So there is the positive of a number of newspapers being added every single year, but then there's also the negative of municipalities trying to criminalize even the distribution of ideas.
Hmm. How can they do that?
They view it, their opinion is that it's more like panhandling, and it's a money-making opportunity for homeless people, and so they have a right to regulate that commerce that exists in the cities. Our opinion is a little different. Our opinion is that it's the exchange of ideas, it's sort of an afterthought that there is commerce being generated from this, but the main purpose of most of the street newspapers is to distribute or allow pedestrians to hear the words or read the words of homeless people, which they don't normally get the opportunity to do. Mm-hmm.
What is the response of people on the street, actually, to these newspapers? Are they selling well? I mean, and I heard what you just said about the commerce being a kind of secondary, and I'm sure no millions are being made, that's for sure. Maybe you could say something about that, actually.
Well, they vary in size, and it really depends on the pedestrian population of the city. In places like Phoenix, where it's really hot, it's very difficult to sell a paper because there aren't a lot of pedestrian traffic. But in some cities, Chicago, Boston, Seattle, it's a huge undertaking, and there are hundreds of vendors, and there are thousands of papers being distributed every week. So it really varies by city, and we have tiny cities. Wyoming has a street newspaper that also participate in the association. So it really varies depending on the city and depending on the pedestrian traffic.
Mm-hmm. Because I guess I'm asking, what is are people interested? And I would maybe like to bring Donald Whitehead in here also at this point, who was the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, was himself formerly homeless and was also the director of the Greater Cincinnati Coalition for the Homeless. How about in Cincinnati? And you're from Ohio, too, so you're both from Ohio. Do you find people to be very concerned and interested?
Oh, there is definitely a lot of interest in Cincinnati. We've been very successful with our paper. It's kind of, in terms of, the papers that sell a lot and the smaller papers, we're probably in the middle. We sell about 8,000 copies a month. But we've had over 300 vendors that have been a part of our vending process. Mm-hmm. So it has been very well received in Cincinnati. And we're allowed to sell on campuses. We're allowed to sell in churches. So it's been accepted by all portions of the population.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear. I know that I feel kind of privileged to be able to really hear directly from people who are not housed, and to hear what their experience is like, because so often these things are so mediated by the corporate press, the corporate media, basically. How about the corporate media and the issue of homelessness? Who wants to talk about that?
I can talk. The corporate media has definitely not been a friend to those people that are without homes. What has happened, a lot of negative treatment by individuals against homeless people has been a result of the depiction of homeless people in the mainstream media. Every story about a homeless person carries a tag. It's not the word homeless that causes the anger against homeless people. It's the tags that are attached to it. And I think we've seen, because of that depiction of homeless people in the negative sense, we've seen an increase in hate crimes against people that are homeless. I think it's directly attributed to the kind of press that's given in the mainstream media to homeless people.
Yeah, it's really incredible that people who are poor, basically, is what it amounts to, should be considered bad people and dangerous and all these incredible things. I guess it's part of you have to dehumanize people in order to justify not treating them right.
Exactly. Exactly, you do, and it happens so much that we, as I was saying before, we're seeing this increase. In fact, in the last 2 years, there have been 92 people that have died as a result of hate crimes simply because they were homeless. Mm-hmm. And because they're less valued in society because of their depiction, people, their lives are worthless to those people who have perpetrated those crimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're African-American, Donald Whitehead. That must be really doubly horrible to have to deal with racism, the prejudices of, the racism, and also the prejudices and negative stereotypes about homelessness.
Right. A phenomenon that's actually occurring across the country is that the numbers of African Americans who are in the homeless population continue to increase. in Cincinnati, for instance, in the, I don't know, late 70s, early 80s, the African-American population was about 20-30%. It's now grown. Our last study we did in Cincinnati was in 1999, and we finished it in 2000. And at that point, 60% of our homeless population was African-American. And a lot of the reason why some of those people are there have to do with the racism that's in society. I wouldn't say it's the single reason, but I would say that housing, issues of housing discrimination, issues of discrimination in the workplace have a great deal to do with why people are homeless in America today.
Yeah. I'm sure that must be true. So, is there anything, I mean, just feel free to also just pop in here, Brian Davis, if you want to do that. You are, Donald Whitehead, you're is a new executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. What are you going to make any kind of changes? Or first of all, tell me actually about what exactly the National Coalition for the Homeless consists of and what it does.
Well, the National Coalition consists of 300 state and local homeless coalitions. We have a governing body of about 42 members who represent 32 states, Puerto Rico, and the Sioux Nation, also the District of Columbia. And we basically have four focus areas. Those focus areas are housing, that's affordable to all those that need housing, civil rights for people that are homeless, livable incomes for people that are homeless, and universal health care for people that are homeless. And those are the issues that we work on. And we work on those issues. Our single goal is to end homelessness, but we also, as a second part of that goal, we work on behalf of people that are currently homeless. So basically, we organize and educate on those issues, and we also do advocacy on a federal level with our federal legislators in order to affect change for people that are homeless.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm realizing as I'm using this word homeless, and I've kind of realized this before, but right now I've been doing a bunch of interviews and using this word a lot, and it becomes just another word, homeless, you know, when it's like such an intense thing, I mean, that we're talking about that has to do with poverty and how somebody spends their 24 hours in the day. And I wonder if either one of you would like to talk about that. It's part of the numbness, I guess, is, you know, when you keep using the same word, and especially as a description of a person.
George Carlin said that that's one of the problems with the word homeless is it's an abstract concept that we don't understand. And if we used concepts that people understood, a house, that's what these people are, is they don't have a house. We all understand that. That's a house is a physical structure. And that's what people are really lacking is houses. We are numb to that, and I think the media is a big part of that. We really have lost homelessness as a front page issue. It's rare that it's on the front page anymore. It's unless there is some either tragedy or there's some assault by the municipality against homeless people, it doesn't make the news anymore. And we don't discuss it anymore. We don't discuss it. It wasn't part of the 2000 election that we have this national tragedy of homeless people. So it really has been lost, and we all sort of put blinders on when we walk downtown that there is this population that exists on the street and have huge problems and barriers to getting into something stable.
I just can't imagine. I try not to have blinders on, and sometimes even I do myself. But when I walk in downtown San Francisco, a certain area where I go sometimes for meetings, it's just incredible how I see people living. And on the one hand, it's nice they're together with each other. I mean, it looks nice. I only obviously see the most superficial things, but I just it just must be so horrendous. And I wonder if either one of you would just like to talk a little bit more, since we've got listeners who just bring it home a little bit more, home the issue, you know, what it's like to be homeless.
I guess I should speak on that because I have been homeless. It's probably the most miserable, incredibly tough time that a person could ever experience. In fact, as a homeless person, you become invisible. People on the street rarely ever make eye contact with you. They look past you. They look through you. And it's an incredibly tough time when you have your self-esteem at the lowest point it probably can possibly be. And a lot of people, I guess, in society, sometimes I've heard things like homeless people are lazy or homeless people want to be that way. I'm here to tell you, as a person who's experienced that, is that the conditions are so terrible that no one could possibly want to be that way. There's so many other factors involved, but homelessness is not a moral issue. It's an issue of economics. And it's basically people that don't have a safety net, whether it's that family member or the friend or the federal government. They don't have that in place, and that's why they become homeless. Even the conditions within the shelter system, where people think after you get off the streets it's an ideal situation, is the worst of living conditions that a person can possibly have. So it's probably the hardest thing that anybody could ever imagine. I mean, there's not one restful sleeping night that you'll ever have as a homeless person. And the conditions, unfortunately, here are some of the worst I've seen in the country. And although I haven't
seen... You're being the San Francisco Bay Area.
Exactly. I haven't seen good conditions on homelessness anywhere in the country, but the visible homeless in San Francisco and the Bay Area is some of the worst visible homelessness I've seen throughout the country. And I don't know if Brian wants to comment on that,
yeah,
too.
In good old sunny California, with all the tourists that come, that's probably part of one of the reasons it's so bad, because all the sweeping off the street business because they don't want tourists to see. I want to say that you just heard the last person you heard speaking before me, Sue Supriano, was Donald Whitehead, and he is going from having been homeless to being executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, D.C. So that's some good news for you anyway, and probably for the cause. And Brian Davis, who is the editor of The Homeless Grapevine in Cleveland, Ohio, and the chairman of the North American Street Newspaper Association, which is where we're having this conversation. You want to say something?
We meet with homeless people on a regular basis, and we have vendors that are homeless that come into our office, and the conditions are horrible that they have to exist in. But the most amazing thing that I've seen is the dignity and the ability to survive and have some degree of pride and ability to wake up every morning and continue. And even, I mean, from our vendors who also write for the paper, that pride in authorship and the pride in sales and the pride in being the top vendor for the paper or being recognized for something within the paper is amazing in this time of horrible upheaval in their life, that they would then have the ability to even get up is an amazing thing, and to carry on is I mean, that's, we don't see that, and the general pedestrian population that walks by the individual who's sleeping on the street doesn't see that. But I think if they're picking up a paper, a street newspaper, or they have any contact, volunteer or otherwise, with homeless people, they do get that sense that this is an amazing individual who's able to carry on in the face of such tragedy, and in the face of domestic violence or in the face of post-traumatic stress disorder from being a veteran or all those things. There are some amazing stories, and I think that's what the strength of the street newspapers are, that they're able to carry those stories and bring them to the general populace that most of the mainstream media have pretty much ignored.
kind of like being in prison. I think some of these conditions that people have to go through, you either get enlightened or really lose it altogether. And I have had met a lot of really wise people. I mean, you got to learn so much being in that situation, which I wouldn't wish on anybody, but it has to be very deepening, and people have to probably really draw on their spiritual and community resources. I'm sure we could learn a lot, those of us who are more privileged, basically. You're nodding, Donald.
Well, I was just going to say, and it isn't necessarily being more privileged, because I've met many people on the street that came from privilege, that because of different experiences ended up homeless. Mm-hmm. And one thing I should say, and Brian, spoke to this, is just the incredible empowering that happens with these street newspapers. My first experience in getting back on the road to being housed and being a member of society again, because I don't know if as a homeless person you're viewed as a member of society, was with selling Brian's paper, as a matter of fact. The Homeless Grapevine was being sold in Cincinnati at the time, and I was one of there was a few vendors from the homeless population that did it, and that was my first experience with, Brian started to publish some of the articles, and it made me feel like, hey, I am a person again. I am empowered. I can do things, and it started me back on the road, and this is just an incredible tool, the street newspaper movement and the street newspapers in general, and I don't know if people recognize that. It's much more than the dollar value of these papers. The value in what it does for human beings is way more incredible. So I just wanted to add that point.
Yeah, I have that impression from reading it, as a matter of fact. And also it must create a lot more community, I would think.
Yeah, our vendors are certainly... I think that one of the strengths of many of the street newspapers, including the one here in San Francisco, is that they use it as an organizing tool. Mm-hmm. Is that and we do that in Cleveland as well. The vendors that are regular vendors, we can count on. They have some larger sense about what the population is like. And they can represent the interests of homeless people. So they are very great spokespeople for meeting with elected officials, meeting with media, meeting with even social service providers to express the changes that should happen in the community. So I think some of the good cities, as far as advocacy, use their street newspapers as an entry point for community organizing of the homeless population, and that's really a strength that I don't think was intended at the beginning of this movement, but it certainly has been a great outcome.
Yeah. Well, and also about other issues, I want to say they're not only about issues about homelessness, but there have been some breaking stories in the newspapers in the Bay Area, actually about other kinds of issues, and of course, it's all connected. And I really look forward to reading, because I know I'm going to hear some truth about some things. Mm-hmm. And tell me about the breadth of newspapers that are part of this North American Street Newspaper Association. Are they nonprofits? Or just some of them have advertising? They not have advertising? If you would, maybe Brian, you could speak about that.
Yeah, the papers vary widely, from huge papers like Chicago, which has an extensive advertising department and is very much run like a newspaper, very attractive to the eye, to very small papers which don't have advertising, are mainly focused on poverty issues, and so are therefore a little more depressing when you read them, and they're not really for the USA Today type crowd where you just sit down, read it for a second, and put it down and move on. They're really more like The Nation, where you have to read the story, and the content is very critical. And there are small papers that are written, you know, Xerox copies and distributed. So they're really, they vary widely. And the just from being at these conferences, the editors and the vendors that attend these conferences are very diverse populations and very, I mean, they come from Texas to Washington to Edmonton and Halifax, small communities like Halifax that have papers. So it is very diverse, and I don't think that you could find another national or international type organization that has such a diverse body.
And as Donald referred to a little earlier, in terms of people who are homeless in the United States, that population is much more diverse than a lot of people would think. And maybe we could talk about that. And our time is kind of running out here, but that seems like an important topic.
Well, it is a very diverse population, and I think one thing that every American should know, that population over the last 10 years, the largest growing sector of that population has been women and children. And more we're finding that women and children are becoming a part of that population. And I think that is the issue that we should be troubled by most. I can't remember who said, and I'm not going to do the entire mm-hmm. quote, but a society that can't take care of its women and children should be ashamed. But it goes on to say some more in the quote, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it really is, that is the average age for a homeless person in America now is 9, and that's just incredible to me.
Wow. The average age of a homeless person in America is 9 years old. And, of course, I mean, we all know that development of human beings is the most important times is youth. So that's got to have a major effect on our future years.
Oh, definitely. And there's been four really big studies over the last few years, and they all say that in the what's prevalent in the adult in the childhoods of adult homeless people is institutionalization as a child. So as the population gets younger, we are creating, in effect, more homeless people because that institutionalization often time means institutionalization as an adult. So it's really a scary scenario. But, you know, we at the National Coalition at NASNA, we're working on systemic change, and that involves getting resources for people before they get into that institutionalization stage.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a really important organization for sure. Let's have a little contact information for the National Coalition for Homelessness.
You can reach us at area code 202-737-6444 or nationalhomeless.org on the World Wide Web.
You can reach the North American Street Newspaper Association at www.nasna.org.
Okay, well, thank you very much for this interview, Brian Davis, the head of the North American Street Newspaper Association, chairperson of that, and also Donald Whitehead, the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.